You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
It is my privilege to introduce to you our final guest speaker for tonight, coming all the way from Australia, Dr. Sam Chan. Sam Chan is the lead mentor and trainer at EVQ School of Evangelism at the City Bible Forum in Australia. Originally trained as a doctor, he got his PhD in theology at Trinity Divinity School, and he is the author of several books, including Evangelism in a Skeptical World and How to Talk About Jesus Without Being That Guy, a book that I read recently, which I loved, highly recommend. A friend of mine pointed me to Sam's personal blog today. There's a note in his biography. It says, Sam is hopeless at taking out the garbage. He's hopeless at boiling an egg, rugby, dancing, and karaoke, but he does know every word to Billy Joel's Piano Man. Maybe we'll get a rendition later. Let's welcome up Sam Chan.
Oh, thank you, Columbus. Thank you so much for having me here. This is my first time. Oh, thank you. This is my first time in Columbus, Ohio. And looking around, it looks like it's the first time any Asian's been in Columbus, Ohio. So yes, in case you're wondering, I'm Asian. I was born in Hong Kong, but my parents moved to Australia when I was just a little baby. So I grew up in Australia, spent most of my time in Australia. So thanks again for having me here. Now, we used to think smoking was okay, but now we don't think that anymore. When I was in med school, they taught us that stomach ulcers came from too much acid, but that's no longer true. It's bacteria. When I was a little kid, they told me that if I ate my vegetables, I would grow up tall. But that wasn't true. We always look back at previous generations and we roll our eyes at what they used to think was true, good and beautiful, because we now see that as wrong and foolish and bad. But that just means future generations are going to look back at us and also judge us as wrong and bad. See, every generation thinks that they, out of all people, have got it right. They know what's true, what's good, what's beautiful. But what makes us any different from those who have come before? We too one day will be judged as wrong, bad, and foolish. But what about matters of faith? Imagine if we've got it wrong about big things like God or Jesus. So tonight, the question I want to ask is this: How do I know if Jesus is true? So this is a question I'm going to try to answer now in the form of a 30-minute talk, followed by question and answer from you guys. So as I'm speaking, think of whatever question you want to ask, text it to the number, and I'll do my best to answer those questions afterwards. So our question tonight is this: how do I know if Jesus is true? And to answer this, I'm going to refer to a story that's probably quite well known by you people. It comes from an eyewitness account in the pages of the Bible by one of Jesus' followers called John. And in this eyewitness account, John is going to recount an episode in the life of Jesus. Now, every year when I give talks about Jesus, I love to go through the internet and I try to find pictures of what I think Jesus would look like if he was here today. But just last year, I was speaking somewhere and a guy said to me, Stop it. Stop going through the internet to find pictures of what you think Jesus would look like if he was here today. And I said, why? And then he said, because if Jesus was here today, he would look like me. A short, tanned, nondescript, Middle Eastern male. So from now on, I'm going to use this guy's picture to say, if Jesus was here today, this is what he would look like. But the Bible also hints that Jesus probably wasn't all that good looking. So I think this guy's way too good looking to be Jesus. But in the eyewitness accounts of John, John tells us about Jesus. Jesus dies on a cross, but 3 days later, Jesus rises from the dead and he appears in front of all his disciples, his followers, but one of his followers was not there and his name was Thomas. So all the other disciples tell Thomas, dude, we have just seen Jesus risen from the dead. And Thomas goes, no. People do not rise from the dead unless I see Jesus with my own eyes, unless I touch him with my own hands. I'm sorry, I will not believe. But just a few days later, Jesus appears again. And this time Thomas is there and Thomas does see Jesus with his own eyes. Thomas touches Jesus with his own hands and Thomas believes. Thomas says, my Lord, my God, and he welcomes Jesus into his life. So from this story, let's go back to our question. How do I know if Jesus is true? So I'm going to set the bar here and say, no, let's begin here. Jesus can't be true. I'm sorry, people do not rise from the dead. Let's make this ground zero. How do I know if Jesus is true? Let's begin here. I'm sorry, Jesus can't be true. So let's look at this eyewitness account from John. John says this, now Thomas was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told Thomas, we've seen the Lord. But Thomas said, I'm sorry, unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and unless I put my finger where the nails were, and unless I put my hand into his side, I will not believe. Thomas says, I'm sorry, I will not believe. Jesus, he's not true. People do not rise from the dead. Now, I'm with Thomas here because I'm a doctor. I'm a person of the sciences. I believe in evidence-based belief. And as a doctor, I want to tell you, people do not rise from the dead. I'm with Thomas on this one. Now, when I was a little child, 6 years old, I was just watching TV and boom, the ad for Psycho came on. No spoilers, but in this ad, it shows a man with a knife coming through the shower curtain to attack someone as they were taking a shower. And I was a little boy and I was so traumatized by this, I was terrified. I was too scared to take a shower by myself for the next 2 years in case this would happen. But you can't blame me because that's what children do. Children believe what they can't see. As children, we believe there are monsters under our bed. As children, we believe in unicorns. As children, we believe in the fairy godmother. But as we grow up, we stop believing in things we cannot see. And so we stop believing in God, miracles, and angels. And I'm sorry, if you want me to believe in God, miracles, and angels, you may as well ask me to believe in the fairy godmother and unicorns. So I'm with Thomas on this one. Jesus can't be true. So let's go back to our original question. It was this. Well, how? How do I know if Jesus is true? And I want to say that from this story, we have three things that we can hang on to. So the first thing is this. How do I know if Jesus is true? The first thing is this. Well, how do we know if anything is true? Let's zoom back now and ask the bigger meta question. How do we know if anything is true? Let's look at the story. The story goes like this. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and this time Thomas was with them. And though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then Jesus said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. see my hands, reach out your hand, put it in my side, stop doubting and believe. Thomas sees Jesus with his own eyes. Thomas touches Jesus with his own hands. And because of that, now he believes. So how do we believe what we believe? Well, let me now give all of us here a crash course in epistemology, the philosophy of knowledge. Why do we believe what we believe? So if we have a table here now, how do we believe what we believe? Let's say our truth claim is 1 + 1 = 2. Well, this is a mathematical truth claim. And to prove this, well, we're going to need the tools of deduction and logic. Let's try another truth claim. Let's say the truth claim is the sky is blue. Well, this is an appeal to the senses. So to prove this, well, we're now going to use empiricism. Let's say the truth claim now is this: water boils at 100 degrees Celsius in Australia, but in the USA, it's 212 Fahrenheit. This is what we call a scientific truth claim. To prove this, you're going to have to use induction, experiments, in other words, the scientific method, repeatable, observable experiments. Let's say the truth claim is World War I ended in 1918. How do we know this to be true? None of us were alive to see this. Well, this is a historical truth claim. And to prove this, we need eyewitnesses, we need testimony, and if the eyewitnesses are no longer alive, then we're going to need documentation. Let's say the truth claim is this now: I am innocent of crime. How do you know this to be true? Well, this is a legal truth claim. Will it hold up in a court of law? Here to prove this, you're going to need eyewitnesses and testimony. Now, let's say the truth claim is Lisa cooks a good pancake. What sort of truth claim is this? Well, it's a know-how truth claim. Does Lisa know how to cook a good pancake? And to prove this, well, you're going to need testimony. People are going to say, hey, I've eaten Lisa's pancakes and they are good. But you may say, no, unless I taste it for myself, only then will I know. Well, now you're going to need experience. Experience the pancake for yourself. Let's say the truth claim is this: my wife loves me. So when I come home to Australia, my wife greets me in the door and she says, I love you. How do I know this is true? As a person of the sciences, I say, prove it. Show me. Give me an x-ray. Give me a blood test. Give me a mathematical scientific algorithm. No, that's a category error, because this is a relationship truth claim. And to prove a relationship truth claim, well, you're going to need trust. I had to trust her at her word. We're going to need testimony. My friends will say, hey, I think your wife does love you. And because it's a relational truth claim, you can only really know for sure by committing yourself to the relationship. You have to relate. Now, what do you notice about this table of truth claims? There's actually a spectrum. Up the top of the spectrum, these truth claims are easy to verify. If I make these claims, it's easy for you to check the sky. Yes, it is blue. You can boil water. Yes, it does boil at 212 Fahrenheit. Easy for you to verify. But now when we come down to the bottom half of the truth claims, harder for you to verify. You weren't around in 1918. You don't know my character. Am I innocent of crime? You don't know Lisa. You've never eaten her pancakes. You don't know my wife. These are harder claims to verify. They may be true, but harder for you to know if they're true. Now, in education, notice the top half we call the sciences. The bottom half we call the arts and humanities. Now, as an Asian, oh, we love the sciences. Why? because it's just true, false, multiple choice questions. You get them right or you get them wrong. And if you get them right, they're just throwing marks at you. It is so easy to get 100% in chemistry, physics, and maths. Bottom half, arts and humanities. Us Asians, we don't like arts and humanities. No, because you have to write papers. You have to write essays. It's more about the vibe. It's more on the one hand this, on the other hand this. People have said this, but other people have had said this. And you can give them the best paper ever and they give you 80%. So if you want to get in medicine or law, don't do humanities, do the sciences, because you can get 100% in the sciences. And that's why we call them the hard sciences and they're softer sciences down the bottom. But even here, it's a little bit naive to think of the sciences as 100% guaranteed proof and arts and humanities as harder to prove. And Bertrand Russell, famous UK atheist philosopher in the 20th century, said this. He said, there's no such thing as the hard sciences, because Bertrand Russell said, for science to be guaranteed to be true, science requires tomorrow to be exactly the same as today. And that's something science itself cannot prove for you. In fact, for science to be true, science requires many things to be true that science itself cannot prove. So for science to be true, we need at least one, the universe to be ordered. We need two, the rules of logic to apply. We need three, our senses and memories to be reliable. And four, we need other minds to exist. But science needs these truth claims to be true, but science itself can't prove these things to be true. We just have to accept them as true, as brute force facts, but we cannot prove them. But we're happy to assume they are true. So how do we know what we know? Suddenly we realise it's not so easy to verify what we know. So really the way we know things is through what I call the Chinese shoe problem. This is the Chinese shoe problem. If you have an Asian friend, have you noticed whenever you visit their house, they make you take your shoes off and leave them outside the house before you go in, which is a real problem because you have spent $100 on your shoes but only $10 on your socks. So now you walk around in $10 socks. So if you visit an Asian person's house, you really should spend only $10 on the shoes because you're gonna have to take them off anyway, and $100 on your socks. That's the Chinese shoe problem. No, the Chinese shoe problem is this. When you come out of the house, in front of you will be a mountain of shoes that everyone else has taken off. How do you know which shoes are your shoes now? Well, actually, it's not a problem at all because we all know it's easy to solve. You go for the shoes of best fit. The shoes that best fit your feet, well, they are your shoes. So how do we know what we know? In epistemology, we say, you know, really, we know what we know because of what we call the explanation of best fit. That's how we know what we know. What best fits? What best fits the data? What best fits my experience? And what best fits the testimony, what people tell me. And out of all of this, we realize, you know what? How do we know what we know? It actually comes down to this. It comes down to trust and testimony. Almost everything we know to be true comes from trust and testimony. Do I trust the testimony of those I trust? And actually, that's how we know almost everything that we know to be true. So I'm going to ask for some audience participation here. And I know, as an outsider, I know this is a political minefield. I know the USA right now is so polarized. I know I'm going to get myself into trouble. So I'm not trying to get into trouble. So I'm being very cautious here. But, okay, I need a show of hands. I need a show of hands here for who here thinks the earth is round. Oh, wow. Okay, hands down. Okay, so did you see that? Majority opinion. We're not as polarized as I thought we were, but majority opinion. Okay, now, hands up. So we all believe the earth is round. Hands up if you have been in the spaceship to see that the earth is round. Whoa, nobody, right? So all of us believe this to be true, even though we haven't seen it with our own eyes. Why? Because that's what they tell us and we trust them. All right, again, hands up if you believe you have a brain inside your head. All right, thank you, hands down. Majority opinion. Now hands up if you've seen your own brain. Oh, almost no one, right? We just believe we have a brain in there because that's what they tell us and we trust them. And now one or two of you will say, oh, I've seen the scan. I've seen the MRI scan. Well, let me ask you, do you know how an MRI scan works? No. Do you think the doctor knows how an MRI scan works? No. But we just believe it works. We take them at their word. All right, hands up. If you believe that water boils at 212 Fahrenheit. Whoa, okay, thank you. Hands up, majority opinion. Okay, hands up if you've done the scientific experiment to prove for yourself it boils at 212 Fahrenheit. Whoa, okay, thank you. Hands up, maybe only 30 hands in this room went up then. Hands up if when you boil the water in the experiment, it did boil at 212 Fahrenheit. Not 213, not 2110, it actually boiled at 212. Five hands, right? So the rest of you who did the experiment and didn't work, you at that moment thought, ah, oh, okay, something wrong with my experiment, right? I'm not at sea level, my water's not pure, maybe my thermometer's not working. At that moment, you chose to believe against what your eyes saw. Why? Because we trust what they tell us. Last one, and I know it's sensitive, so I'm not trying to be insensitive, but hands up if you think your mum and dad really are your mum and dad. Oh, okay, hands down, okay. Okay. Hands up if you've done the DNA test for yourself to prove it. All right, one or two hands, thank you. And why do we do the DNA test? Usually because at some stage, trust broke down. So usually we do these things, so we believe the trust of the test, we believe through trust and testimony. We trust the testimony of those that we know and trust. So that's how we know things to be true. So let's go to the second thing now. Based on what we know about how we know things to be true, number two then was, well, how can we know if Jesus is true? Let's go back to the story. Then Jesus said to Thomas, put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand, put it into my side, stop doubting and believe. Then Jesus told him, because you have seen me, you've believed, but blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written. Why? That you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. What's going on here? Thomas gets to see Jesus. Thomas gets to touch Jesus. You and I can't see Jesus. We can't touch Jesus. So how can we know if Jesus is true? How can we believe? Well, let's go back to that table here. Where would you put Jesus on this table? Well, the Bible never tries to prove, the truth claim of the Bible is never that God exists. That's sort of taken as a given. The truth claim of the Bible is this: God loves you. That's the truth claim of the Bible. So what sort of truth claim is that? Well, it's a historical truth claim because God proves it by sending his son Jesus to die on a cross. So to prove that God loves us, well, we're going to need eyewitnesses, we're going to need testimony, we're going to need documents. It's also a legal truth claim. Would this claim stand up in a court of law? So again, we're going to need eyewitnesses. We're going to need testimony. But it's also a know-how truth claim. Does God know how to love us? And so here we need to appeal to testimony. People will say, wow, God does know how to love me. But we may say, you know what, I'm just going to have to experience this for myself. And it's also a relational truth claim. Can we trust God at His word? Can we rely on the testimony of others? And in the end, because it's a relational truth claim, we can only know for sure by committing ourselves to this relationship. This is how we know the truth claim. We can also say, you know what? I know that Jesus is true because it's the explanation of best fit. Jesus is true, and that's the best explanation for what fits the evidence. Because what fits the fact that there is something instead of nothing? This universe didn't have to be here, but it's here. How? Why is there something instead of nothing? It best explains the fine tuning of the universe. And we all know the fine tuning of the universe. If this universe was out by just 0.0001 degree of anything, there would be no life here on planet Earth. It also best explains how life came from non-life. Now, I know there are many theories for the origins of the species, but in the end, we still have to explain, but how did life come from non-life? What explains that? Also, what explains the fact that we have rational, intelligent thought? Atoms don't have rational thought. We're only atoms. So how do we have rational, intelligent thought? What best explains the fact that we think love is a high moral ideal? Atoms don't love, so why should we love? But somehow we think, no, we ought to love. We also believe in freedom, but there's moral accountability at the same time. We think that things like purpose exists. We're here for a reason. We also believe that mercy is a good thing. We believe in forgiveness. Why would we believe in forgiveness? Atoms don't forgive. Why should you and I forgive? Also, what best explains Jesus' teachings? Because they are very wise. But at the same time, if he's wise, Jesus has his self-awareness that he actually thinks he's the Son of God. What wise person does that? But more than that, he doesn't just think he's a Son of God. He has a willing self-sacrifice where he goes and dies deliberately for you and me. What Son of God does that? What best explains this data? What also best explains the disciples' change of life and explosion of the church in the early first century? Jesus being true is the explanation of best fit. It also best fits trust and testimony. Do I trust the testimony of those I trust? Can I take people at their word? Can I take the disciple John at his word? And that's how we form almost all of belief. In the end, we're prepared to take people at their word. So when we go home and we see a stop sign, we stop. But how do we know? Well, we just take it at his word. Stop. Okay, I'm stopping. When your teacher says, there is a paper due tomorrow, how do you know? We just know. We take her at her word. When we go to McDonald's and they say, this meal will be $10, how do we know? We just take them at their word. When my boys go online shopping for a Rubik's Cube and then they put my credit card details into the website, how do we know this Rubik's Cube would turn up? We take them at their word. And now almost everyone here drove here tonight. Hands up if you checked under your car for a bomb first. Wow, no one. See, there could have been a bomb, right? Because we all lead very interesting lives. There could be a bomb, but somehow we were willing to commit our life. When we push start on the car, we committed our life at that moment to believing there's no bomb under my car. We went beyond what we could see, but somehow it was the explanation of best fit. See, there is adequate evidence that there was no bomb under your car. There was adequate evidence that it's going to be $10 at McDonald's. There's adequate evidence that the stop sign says stop. Adequate evidence that your paper is due tomorrow. Adequate evidence that the Rubik's Cube will turn up after you put the credit card details in. And based on that same burden of proof, there's adequate evidence, adequate certainty that Jesus is true based on how we know other things to be true. But number three, more than that, Jesus isn't just true. Jesus is what I need to be true. Let's go to the story and see what John says. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written, why? That we may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. Why? That by believing, we may have life in his name. When Thomas believes, he does more than believe. He welcomes Jesus into his life. My Lord, my God, he says. And it's life-giving and it's life-changing. Now, what's the first thing that you and I do whenever we walk into any room? This is what we do. We scan it. And all we're looking for is a power outlet. Because if you can find a power outlet, boom. Oh. I can charge my phone. And when you see this lightning bolt symbol on your phone, we are flooded. We are filled with happy hormones. Jesus gives us his words, and they're more than just true. If we connect, if we plug ourselves into these words, they will fill us, not just with truth, but they will fill us with life. We'll be connected with Jesus. We will be in Jesus and Jesus will be in us. Look at these words of Jesus and you'll see they're more than just true. Jesus says, love each other as I have loved you. This is more than true. It's actually good. If everyone did this, this would be good. Jesus says this, do to others as you would like them to do to you. This is more than true. This is beautiful. If everyone did this, this would be a beautiful world to live in. Jesus also says, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet lose their soul? This is wise. If we all live like this, we would be wise. This would be life-changing. Jesus also says, you need to be born again. This is life diagnosing. We all need to hear this. And Jesus says, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. This is life-giving. Jesus' words aren't just true. We need them. They're life-giving and they're life-changing. So let's go back to our original question. It was this. Well, how do I know if Jesus is true? And tonight I've said three things. Number one, well, how do we know if anything is true? Number two, how do I know if Jesus is true? And I said, based on how we know things to be true, based on those same burdens of proof, we have adequate certainty, adequate proof that Jesus is also true. But number three, he's more than true. He's also good. He's beautiful. He's wise. He's life-changing and he's life-giving. Now, what are you like when you receive a phone call from a number you don't recognise? You think, oh, do I pick it up? Do I delete, cancel, hang up? What do I do? And we always cancel, don't we? We always hang up because we don't know the number. And if we don't know the number, we can't trust the person. We can only trust those we know, but we can only know those we trust. This is Richard and Tricia. They're my friends from Sydney, Australia. They've been married for 30 years, but it almost didn't happen. Because when they first started dating, when Richard finally declared to Tricia, I love you, Tricia's thinking, how do I know? How do I know if I can trust this person? So Tricia had a friend that worked in the police department. And she did a search on Richard's name for her and it came up clear. But at the same time, how do you know? Because he could be very good at being very bad. How do you know? In the end, to know, Tricia had to commit. She had to surrender herself to the evidence and commit to the relationship. That's the only way she knew for true. So in our journey of life, how do we know if Jesus is true. And tonight I've said, based on the same standards of proof that we know things to be true in life, in general, we have adequate certainty, adequate proof that Jesus is true. But he's more than true. He's good. He's beautiful. He's wise. He's life-giving and he's life-changing. So all we have to do to plug into this is just commit, surrender to the evidence, and commit to the relationship.